the Wednesday, July 14th iteration of the Ways and Means Public Safety Subcommittee. We have two work sessions today. We will begin with House Bill 2002. We have a quorum. I declare this meeting fully attended. Quorumed, I guess. Do we have a report from staff?
Yes, Chair West, from committee members. This is the bill that we passed out of subcommittee this last weekend. It was on the full agenda and it was referred back to the committee.
Wait a minute, we had a bill referred back?
Yes, Chair Westman, we had a bill referred back to our first bill that's ever been referred back to.
That really had to be off. Okay, hold on.
The primary reason for the bill to be referred back is because there was an unintended consequence based on the emergency clause in the bill that would have caused not given DMV enough time to update their records. So those who were stopped for driving while suspended weren't appropriately cited for a felony and arrested for a felony arrest when it would in fact otherwise under the law been a misdemeanor. So what we've done is prepared amendments for you in the dash A12, which basically delay the effective date of the change to the driving while suspended laws until September 1.
In review of how we built fiscal impact, it made no change in the fiscal impact statement.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brzezinski.
I'm wondering if Chad McCullough is why that unintended consequence wasn't brought to our attention before it was voted out.
I can give you a little bit, but I think the chair is probably in a better position to do that than me.
I can't believe this has occurred. And I believe we could probably get a more complete explanation from the horse's mouth that perhaps could fully explain this is Kelly Taylor, mayor present. Could she come forward? Ms. Taylor.
Chair.
We are here today in part because of your esteemed work. And we want to recognize that with a particular award. Congratulations. You caused the first public safety subcommittee bill to be returned from full committee. We pride ourselves on our work and feel that communication has been the cornerstone of our committee's success. Some, however, in their lack of attention to detail, have created this humiliation for our respective members. By the authority vested in me by the 99 legislature, I hereby grant to Kelly Taylor the first, in the best words of Cool Hand Luke, what we have here is a failure to communicate. Award. Signed by Larry Nieslander, committee chair, and myself. She offered to shine my shoes. We could not find a toothbrush.
Anyway. I apologize for my failure to communicate. It was not my fault.
We have 18A. We want to see you what?
It was 18 or 23 in Cool Hand Luke, correct?
We do appreciate Kelly's bringing this to our attention. We want this whole thing to work smoothly, and she made a good catch. So our compliments to you. Is Deborah Gilmore in the audience, in the witness? Also, if we can get some testimony from Deborah with regard to this bill and the technical fits and all what's going on.
Good morning, Mr. West and the members of the committee. My name is Deborah County Gilmore, and I am the legislative liaison to the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI, and I just wanted to bring to the committee the Governor's Advisory Committee's position on this bill. It was the number one priority for the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI to have felony DUI become law, and so they are in full support of this bill. We have looked at the amendments, and we are in full support of the amendments, and just wanted to make certain that this committee was aware of their commitment to making sure that this bill gets the attention it needs in order for passage.
We appreciate you being here. We appreciate your supportive testimony. Okay, we're in work session.
We have amendments. The dash 12. The dash 12 amendment. Representative Schrader, for the first time in this committee this year, has moved some amendments. Representative Schrader has moved the A12 to House Bill 2002. Any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the only question I do have is, I didn't receive a copy of the fiscal impact. Is there any associated with this book?
Chair Weston and Senator Hannon, we reviewed the fiscal impact, and based on the length of time it takes to process cases through the system, we estimate that the delay of approximately 30 days will not change the fiscal impact.
What was the original fiscal impact?
Fiscal impact calls for a reduction in the community corrections grant.
Put Ms. Taylor on the spot too much, but I believe we've had conversations that would indicate that in her programming of the DMV computers, they would try to get this one first. That money reprogrammed has already been allocated. Let the record show that Ms. Taylor is not in the affirmative with that. Thank you, Kelly. Representative Schrader has moved the dash 12. Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
We have to move House Bill 2002 to the full late range of Tuesday.
We have to back all the way up.
We need a motion to accept 2002 budget. Accept and review. Let the record show that Representative Minnis has moved we accept back from full committee and reconsider House Bill 2002. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Schrader has moved the dash 12 amendments to House Bill 2002, dated 7/13, into the bill. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2002 to the full Ways and Means of the Cash Recommendation as amended.
Representative Schrader has moved House Bill 2002 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections or any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
What do you think the odds are we get this thing back? Can we get a collection up? I mean, maybe we can send, you know, Shelley on a vacation someplace. Well, we have some fairly significant horsepower, too. Maybe we just sent her to for a while. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, and Shelley, thank you for being a good sport on this. Hey, if we can't have any fun, it isn't worth being here. Okay, we will close the work session on House Bill 2002 and open the work session on House Bill 2317 relating to courts.
Courts and staff. 2317 is before you. You also have A6 amendments to the bill. What the bill does, it allows for the charging of interest on obligations due to the state from fines. It also creates a court maintenance account for the deposits of the interest on these fines that are collected. And the monies would be distributed to counties for their own court facilities accounts. And they would be used by the counties for the maintenance, improvement, replacement, or expansion of court facilities.
Okay. I believe we have some members ready to speak.
That's it?
That's
it. That is a specific presentation. Where have you been all my life? You know, I got to listen to that nice wonder guy.
I should also mention that the amendments move the effective date of these accounts to July 1, 2003 to allow the courts some time to make the necessary changes to their computers and to roll these changes up into their long-range information systems overhaul.
Great.
thus avoiding any fiscal impact in 9901.
Okay. This is an important bill. It makes significant changes to the judicial system. And so we want everyone who wants an opportunity to testify on this bill to have that opportunity. Obviously, a work session, so I'll just call up those people that probably have a vested interest in this. If I'm leaving anybody out, indicate by, you know, raising your hand or throwing things at Patrick.
Not Patrick, he's too close to me.
No, they can get a good listen. Anyway, let me first call up Chief Justice Carson and Kings real quick. Hear your concerns and comments on the legislation.
Mr. Chair, my name is for the record, Chief of the State Court Administrator. I appreciate the opportunity for you to let us have a few moments to talk about the background of this bill. The original bill that was presented by the county would have provided for a task force to study issues related to suitable and sufficient courthouse facilities. And that's been a longstanding issue of ours ever since the state funding as well as with the county. We went through in the substantive committees the parts of the bill that we were comfortable with and concerns we had with others. The original bill with the task force is something that we supported very strongly. The amendments delete all sections of the Engross version of the bill and do, as committee staff testified, provide for calculation of interest on the criminal judgment and provide for distribution of the interest on the criminal fines that are owed to the state to go in a special account that would be distributed to counties on a prorated basis for court facility maintenance and expansion. We appreciate that the effective date was moved to 2003 because that does allow us to plan in the overhaul of the automated financial system after we do the overhaul of the case management system for which you did provide us funding. The policy issue of interest on criminal judgments on amounts owed to the state that would go to the count, who gets the benefit of that interest owed to the state, we feel is a public policy, fiscal decisions the legislative bodies make. With these particular amendments, if they go to the court maintenance account, the concerns that we have to do with the original issue on court facilities. If there are monies that are going to go into account to provide funding for court maintenance and facilities, the Executive Committee on Judicial Commerce had three concerns. They wanted a provision that the monies would be in addition to and not to the exclusion of, nor the exclusive funding source from which counties would be obligated to maintain their suitable and sufficient space requirements. They wanted a provision that the presiding judges of the judicial districts have a say in how the monies are spent in their court location. And they are still very, very concerned that there are no provisions for development of minimum standards for defining suitable and sufficient for state court facilities. We do have some proposed amendments that follow the statute with the court security funds, which are set up on a similar sort of concept that would put these safeguards back in the bill. We've been having kind of sidebar conversations there on what we can agree to or not with both Snyder for the county. There was a mechanical difficulty that was also looked at in the procedural stuff in the amendment, but that's something that could probably be fixed if some version were to be passed. Our concern is with the protections for the courts in this funding source. Chief Justice.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ollie Carson, Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. I have very little to add other than I want to make clear that we've been working on this issue in some degree since 1983 and suitable and sufficient. There may be one of you that remembers confer, consult, and discuss other similar indefinite language. But I do want to be very clear about this. The counties have bargained, if you will, negotiated with us in good faith. Counties do have a problem. Paul Snyder has worked tirelessly to bring us together on the concern. So I very much appreciate what the counties have done in trying to bring us together. We just have some disagreement on how to resolve it. Task force, I think, is important, and we've supported it all along. In order to have forces to come together and have some resolution on how the cooperation between states and counties, how the cooperation is going to be worked out, and we still support the task force idea and have that they proposed. But I think Ms. Quick has outlined the concerns. One of the real problems is, and this is oversimplification, I will assert, and I know you will have Mr. Snyder up here. We've had this disagreement or irresolvable concern is that we would like to see any additional money that comes in, such as the interest on fines, to be devoted to improvement of court facilities, suitable, bringing court facilities up to the suitable and sufficient, whatever that means. And the county, I understand, with their financial plight, are more interested in not directing how it's going to go, but providing information, which simply means, in my view, I'm not saying it's what the county says, in my view, is the interest factor. And so the money that is raised will not, in my view, runs the risk of not improving court facilities at all. It just supplants and supports county funding. Now, if that's okay, that's your work, but it's not what the court has wanted. We want better facilities. Now, keep in mind, and Paul can speak to this if he wishes, the county commissioners, the Association of Oregon Counties, has a new policy they put in a couple, 3 months ago, that they will not support new judgments unless the legislature funds the alteration, addition, new construction for judgments, and they're certainly entitled to do that. But this money would not necessarily, whatever is collected, and it's in a few out years, would not even go to offset that if the counties choose to put it into maintenance or lights or utilities, other utilities. So that's been the concern, is that for our support, we'd like to see better court facilities. That's why we're here. Better county facilities is their business with you. But better court facilities is what we're talking about. And the way it's now looking or going, there is absolutely, it could be, work out that we do have this new funding source, and we won't see a change in court facilities. And that's our concern. And Ms. Quick has always spoken to the concerns that the Executive Committee of the Judicial Conference is concerned about.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
Justice Carson, when we took over the court administration of the state to pay for the local courts and take that burden off the county, was it always assumed, or was it the intention of the assumption that the state would maintain any modifications, remodeling, updating, expansion, or whatever else, that the state would accept that responsibility?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon, I think Paul and I have had discussions. We've both gone back and read all of the reports starting about 1978, I think, leading up to the 81 legislation. I will assert, and Paul and I disagree, I will assert that the, based on what I've read, and my, I was in the trial court at the time, that the contemplation was the deal struck, the understanding was that the counties would retain the responsibility of suitable and sufficient court facilities, period. And the state would take over all state and all county employees that work in the court, and more significantly, indigent defense was relieved from the county. Now, if I recall Paul's testimony in February, and he was here, I think, at about the time, he has a little different take, and I'll give him credit for that, because I may be wrong, but my understanding is, and I don't intend to speak for Paul, he's very able to but he thought that maybe there's some suggestions that would be revisited. Well, I acknowledge that that's one of the fun things about being in the legislature, is that the 2001 legislature will get to revisit what you do this time, and so on. So, yes, you can review it, and the counties can review it. There's nothing unethical, immoral, or fattening about the counties saying, let's shuffle the cards and take another look at it. So that's true, but I will assert contemplation was, In fact, when I go out to county commissioners, and for the most part, they've been very polite and interested and receptive. I have no complaints about the county commissioners. Well, it's all for them. I didn't leave that out. But the deal I suggested in jest was, okay, we'll take over and start paying rent, and you take back indigent defense. Well, the conversation then moves off some other direction. But
is that a motion, sir?
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman, the reason I asked the question is I think the key justice is quite accurate in the fact that certain conditions when we enacted the counties were supposed to provide and exchange the state was taking over the court administration. And I know a good friend, Mr. Snyder, is an effective lobbyist for the counties, but they're in here trying to sing this any way they can to get more money for the counties. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be spent in the court system. It goes in their general fund, and they have a way of spending it on other programs. And the Chief Justice is pretty well characterized and accurately reflected. Sure the state took over the indigent costs from the counties to save them a substantial amount of money, but perhaps it's time to consider bringing the indigent defense back to the counties if they choose to have greater participation. Maybe they'd like to share in the cost.
Mr. Chairman.
Look here a minute.
Well, I would take a different take on this. I think that the closest thing to an act of God affecting state and local finance in the last few years was Measure 5. And whenever any deals were cut, Measure 5 was unanticipated. And I think Measure 5 reshuffled the deck. It may not have given us any cards, new cards. In fact, it gave us less cards. It would seem to me that we ought to just take a step back and figure out what is the best way to apportion resources for court building construction, maintenance, operation. How do we restructure resources for the judgeships? And yes, we can always throw indigent defense into the mix. I don't think the state has done any better job than the counties did. In fact, I think the state, not through any fault of the people involved, I want to emphasize that, but through fault of the structure that we established, waste money on indigent defense. Not because of any individual irresponsibility, because of the way the structure exists. My question would be, why don't we just, first of all, accelerate this collection of interest? I'm worried about why we're waiting for 2003. I know we may have to put a little money into establishing a computer system and accounting system, but it seems to me 2 years would be enough time to get rolling, start collecting the interest, and establish a task group to revisit the whole question of court facilities and operations, and come back with a definitive response for the next session, saying, and by the way, everyone will want to be involved because, by the way, we're about to see this pot of gold start building, and so that's the incentive to get to the table and talk about it. Maybe a small pot of gold, but I don't like committing in advance to where that money would go, but knowing that the money's there, you create the incentive. And then you have the discussion and say, let's take a fresh look at this. How do we have the best possible physical facilities and the best possible judges and support services throughout the state of Oregon? And how do we fund that in an equitable way, given the mess that we've had since Measure 5? And I throw out this theoretical question. How about a millage rate out of the local assessment so that it's proportionate to the county's capability? Some counties have a lot of resources and others don't, so that we just say each county is expected to have a certain millage rate that's dedicated to the court. And when they've done that, the state steps in and does the rest out of our not vast, but substantial income tax resources. That was about 20 questions, and I just thought I'd give you both a chance to respond.
You want to take the first 10? And
well, before you do, I certainly want to give you an opportunity to respond to that, but I want to recap your median comments, Representative Manning. If I could summarize what I heard you saying, is that you were equating Bill Sizemore to God. Is that?
No, I said next to.
Next to. So right next to. Okay. Left hand or right hand?
Not this is before Lucifer departed.
The archangel.
Yeah. Please indulge us and please proceed.
Yeah, I forgot the last time I used the 10
codes. That's what I'm trying to do. I mean, you only answer five of those.
My disclaimer is that I did not support measure five.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask the clarification of the representative? How much of the courthouse was paid by property taxes in the county prior to Measure 5 or after Measure 5?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know, and I think we should find out.
I think you'll find out when they change the court system. The property taxes of the county dramatically reduced prior to Measure 5. And have probably been continued below that figure since Measure 5. So I'm just raising the issue that I think we need to look at the contractual agreement between the legislature and the county who wants to take over the administration of the court. And that was all done prior to Measure 5.
Sorry, I think we need to consider all of that in a holistic way as kind of the building behind it.
Mr. Chair, let me just take a small, the easy piece of it, and I tried to address it earlier, both in my response to Senator Hammond and my opening remarks. Time for change, and Battle Major 5 has made a substantial difference. I appreciate Senator Hammond's insight to the matter, and I don't know the answer to that, but that should be part of the holistic discussion as we move forward. I want to make sure everyone understands, I am aware that the counties have financial troubles, and I have not suggested that it is mean-spiritedness or anything else that is causing the problem that we're in now. So, Representative Mannix is correct, the landscape has changed, and I think I indicated in my remarks to Senator Hannon's question that one of the good things about this body is that you hold the deck of cards and you get to reshuffle when you think it is appropriate. And that's kind of what I look for in the task force, was the things you're talking about, is because the Association of Oregon Counties, with the able help of Paul Snyder and Bill Linden and Kingsley Cook and Scott Crampton and the judges, have been working to resolve this issue for at least 7 years. And a suitable information surely has not come together. I think the dollars are driving it. Their dollars and our dollars and Tanzanese. But we have supported, I think, throughout the task force that will focus on such issues.
Chair Westland, Representative Mannix, the reason for the 2003 start date was we were asked what would remove a fiscal impact for the department as far as the programming costs to do the changes, and that's given what you gave us in our budget as budget directives and money for automation in our budget hearings, then our overhaul of the financial system, which was designed in the early 80s, so that it could, we have to overhaul it anyway, but that's when the building into it would be about 2002, because in the meanwhile, it's given us money to do the case management, overhaul to bring it into a Windows space, GUI interface, so we do connect family cases, we can provide internet access, we can do the foster care management overhaul, stay on with the data warehouse, come to the e-board, which are our plan to get some supplemental resources to try and achieve as much as that in the biennium, and probably a year into, it'll probably take us a year into the following biennium to complete that. So it was a financial cost this biennium to try and overhaul the financial system that we couldn't do within existing resources, and that's why there was a cost this biennium that wouldn't be next biennium.
Okay. How about January 1, 2003 for Section 234 and also for the judgments entered on or after January 1, 2002? Moves us up 18 months, but it's still 6 months into the next biennium, so it's time to get cracking.
For the design and overhaul and reprogramming and testing, you know, it's not just like adding something onto it. I mean, they're going back to the basics. They did an accelerated schedule, which would probably be about 12 months, and I think 11 to 12 months, and I think that's pretty realistic to do so, because the clerks at the court have to be able to enter.
Well, that assumes then that nothing can be done during this biennium at all, and you have to start July 1 of 2001 to start packaging this?
Yes.
Chair Westland, Representative Mannix, no. Looking at where we are with the work plan from, you know, and the work from what you've given us, this biennium and the resources, it would start in 2002 so that it could be done in time for the 2003. I can look at January 1. I can look at the January 1 date and ask them how that pushes the other priorities.
I think where you're going is what does it cost if we wanted to start it tomorrow? How much money would have to be spent? And I think the answer is $300,000.
Yes, it was approximately $375,000.
$400,000. Okay. Then I think where Representative Mannix is going is if we did that, started it yesterday, how long would it take for the interest garnered off the delinquent accounts to return to some coffers? That, obviously,
you could start off by reimbursing for setting up the system.
Well, that's the next step. But the question is, how long would it take, Kingsley, if we spent how long does it take to get the first $400,000 worth of interest back in the front door?
Chair Weston, Representative Mannix, I can't really answer that because it's interest charged on judgments entered on or after, and then you go through the collection. I mean, I think it will take several years for it to accumulate to $400,000, and that's my best guess. We did some estimates early on when this bill first came up, and based on current collections and current amounts that were in there, we said it could raise probably $550,000 in a full biennium, but that was based on a certain amount of receivables already being in the system. And we can go back and say, based on how we trend now, what would that project by that time? But that was our early look at this bill with existing receivables.
And that's factoring in deadbeat accounts that you don't have a snowball chance in the hot spot of collecting. And
right, and victims, interest to victims would go to them, and the interest to the counties would go to them, the interest to the cities would go to them. And all we're talking about is just the interest on the fine portion of the state under the current.
But just to get the first five, regardless of where it goes, cities, counties, states.
Oh, the total.
Total. First, that's what I'm trying to get at.
Okay.
State spends $400,000. If we took every penny of that interest back to set up the system,
mm-hmm.
how long would it take to get the $400,000 back in the door?
So, listen, I have a file I brought over after I looked at where our budget manager had, I think he has the total. I'm just remembering the portion that were the state fines, so let me.
That's the crucial question as it relates to this committee in this biennium.
If you have any questions for the Chief Justice, I'll look this up.
No, but we have some rocks and the stone. You always grace us with such,
serenity.
You're such a gentleman.
I think Kate has serenity. Impatient. Yeah. I don't have that.
And not paid enough, I would admit.
I wanted to bring that up.
Representative Brzezinski.
Sure, if I could. Chief Justice, I guess some questions I have more on the policy part that you mentioned is that that's a decision for us. I'm wondering if we went with the 8-6, what rate of interest would we be using to accrue on? I mean, I know that there's civil judgments, there's something in the statute. I don't know how we would do that. Would it be mandatory? In other words, the court would not have any discretion in requiring it to be paid. And also whether or not the sentencing court at the time of sentencing would have to state on the record that they are imposing the interest to make certain it's a lawful order.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zanke, I really don't know the answer to any of those. Good question. I'm assuming it's 9%. That's what the civil by statute. I also assume, although I don't know the answer, is that it is automatic. Now, by that I mean the judge would not be entitled to go to 12% on a given defendant or go to 6%. Now, one of the things that I just assume not introduced, but your broad experience in the area and others, know that we maintain our authority in the judicial branch to, in the circumstances, suspend part or all of a given fine. Whether that would apply to suspending part or all of the interest, I can tell you my idea would be no, that it's a package deal. But reserving to the judiciary to take the choices to pay the $100 fine plus the add-on interest and not feed your family, I would hope the judge who was imposing the fine might suspend $50 of it, then have an impact upon the interest. And we've had that experience in mandatory fines that the legislature has sought to impose. And I think it's worked out reasonably well. So I think the answers to your questions are the statute ultimately will determine and preclude the judge. The fine, the interest on fines go with the fine. But we retain the power, I will assert. The judiciary retains the power to suspend the fine in the given circumstances, so that would have an effect on the interest and thing. Now, it's all full cloth.
One other follow-up. Regarding the policy again, has there been any research through the study and the analysis of this as to how many other states use this type of process of interest on criminal fines?
I would defer to the I know the study has been done. I think early on, Doug Bray, who was the Deputy State Court Administrator from the Trump Administrator, well, back in Multnomah County, Trump Administrator worked with Mr. Snyder on developing process, the interest component. I don't know whether they did or out of state. I did not. Are you aware of any?
No, I'm not. Kurt Westland never been for the MP, no, but I can, we can see what we can find out.
Thank you.
Did you come up with a rounded off rough guesstimate?
Chair Westland, no to your immediate question. What I'm recollecting is in our original fiscal impact, which was at that time based on the bill, based on current receivables, and based on categories 3 and 4, we could do one. At that time, we had estimated a receivable base of $108 million. Million of which interest accruing at 9% would have given it about a 19.5 interest receivable, and then had, you know, collectability figures went down from there. But like I said, that was based on existing total receivables, not on receivables on a date certain and how fast they come in. But we have that information we could look at real quickly today, just based on what we've experienced this past year, and do trying to do an easy answer on this, or a reasonable answer on this,
I think. Okay. If you could research that today and over the evening, this is, as I indicated in our opening, this is an important bill, and this is not something that we're going to rush into and take a cursory pass out and, you know, off we go and forget about it. This is an integral part of what I see the entire criminal justice system coming to, one of those pieces.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a real quick question. Currently, is interest collected on categories 3 and 4?
Chair Westman, Administrator, no, there's no interest collected on criminal.
So this is the all new money.
Yeah, no interest is collected. That's one of the points. I mean, to summarize this, here's a vehicle to legitimately create an income stream, and part of the issue before us is where is that and how is that income stream directed. That's what we're looking at in a nutshell. So with that, my pledge is to get our members to the four sessions on time. As you may have noticed this morning, the chair is a little testy on issues of punctuality. I'd like to compliment our senators. And in the spirit of Chief Justice's grace, with regard to my representatives, I just won't say anything. We are adjourned.
So punctual, all the rest of the time. We've gotten the compliment.